So this morning, here in Jetavana, I'd like to talk about three separate occasions in the life of the Buddha, where, in a way, three different types of miracles. Lord Buddha appreciated the miracle of teaching most, and he demonstrates his abilities in the stories that I will read. And also there's an occasion where he demonstrates the extent of the psychic power of a Buddha. So the first story is a little bit humorous, but it has a profound ending. The second story is sad. A sad story, but it has a profound ending also. And the third story is fantastic, really. But let's start with the story of Nanda. Nanda is a bhikkhu. He's the son of Mahaprajapati Bhikkhuni, the cousin of Lord Buddha. And thus I heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Savati in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. The Venerable Nanda, the son of the Blessed One's maternal aunt, told a number of bhikkhus, "Friends, I am leading the holy life dissatisfied. I cannot carry on with the holy life. I shall renounce the training and return to what I abandoned." Just to mention, one of the reasons I decided to read these stories is because they're very human. We hear these fantastic stories of people becoming stream enterers, the first teaching that they hear. His own mum, Mahaprajapati, became a stream enterer when the Buddha visited his dad, King Suddhodana, and she became a stream enterer. Can you imagine? The Buddha's your cousin, your mum's an arahant, and he's struggling with the holy life here in Savati. Those bhikkhus went to the Blessed One and told him this. The Blessed One said to a bhikkhu, "Come, bhikkhu, tell the bhikkhu Nanda in my name. The teacher calls you friend." "Even so, Lord," the bhikkhu replied, and he went to the Venerable Nanda and gave him the message. The Venerable Nanda went to the Blessed One, who asked him, "Nanda, is it true, as it seems, that you are leading the holy life dissatisfied, that you cannot carry on the holy life, and that you will renounce the training and go back to what you abandoned?" "Yes, Lord." "But Nanda, why is this?" "Lord, when I left to renounce the house life, the Sakyan beauty, Janapada Kalyani, gazed after me with her hair partly held back, and she said, 'Come back soon, Prince.' When I remember that, I lead the holy life dissatisfied." Then the Blessed One took the Venerable Nanda by the arm, and as quickly as a strong man might extend his flexed arm or flex his extended arm, they vanished in Jeta's Grove and appeared among the deities of the 33, Dawatimsa Heaven. Now on that occasion, 500 nymphs with dove's feet had come to wait upon Saka, ruler of gods. The Blessed One asked the Venerable Nanda, "Nanda, do you see those 500 nymphs with dove's feet?" "Yes, Lord." "What is your opinion, Nanda? Which is more lovely, more beautiful, more alluring? The Sakyan beauty, Janapada Kalyani, or these 500 nymphs with dove's feet?" "Lord, the Sakyan beauty, Janapada Kalyani, is like a scalded she-monkey with her nose and ears lopped off, compared to these 500 nymphs with dove's feet. She does not count at all. She is nothing like them. There is no comparison whatsoever. These 500 nymphs are infinitely more lovely and beautiful and alluring." "Then enjoy the holy life, Nanda. Enjoy it, and I guarantee you're obtaining 500 nymphs with dove's feet." "Lord, if the Blessed One guarantees my obtaining that, then I shall enjoy the holy life." Then the Blessed One took the Venerable Nanda by the arm, and as before, they vanished in the heaven of the 33 and reappeared in Jeta's Grove. Bhikkhus heard, "It seems that the Venerable Nanda is living the holy life for the sake of nymphs, for it seems that the Blessed One has guaranteed his obtaining 500 nymphs with dove's feet." Then his friends among the bhikkhus treated him as a hireling who had sold himself. The Venerable Nanda is a hireling, it seems, who has sold himself, since he leads the holy life for the sake of nymphs. The Blessed One, it seems, has guaranteed his obtaining 500 nymphs with dove's feet. He became humiliated, ashamed, and dismayed at his companion's words. So he went to dwell alone and withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and self-controlled, till by realization himself with direct knowledge, he here and now entered upon and abode in that supreme goal of the holy life for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the house life into homelessness. He knew directly, birth is exhausted, the holy life has been lived out, what was to be done has been done, there is no more of this to come. And the Venerable Nanda became one of the Arahants. So you see Lord Buddha's skillful means, taking him with the power of his psychic abilities to see celestial maidens who were even more beautiful than human princesses. So in a way it's using his kilesa to train him and allowing it to become inflated like that. And then he became very excited and boasted, and then he was embarrassed and ashamed of his kilesa. So a little bit of shame in the right amount can be very helpful. Anyway, just in case some women are thinking that sounds sexist, I'm going to read an inspiring story about a woman who became an arahant. Good? Keep it balanced. Patachara, this is the sad story with a profoundly happy ending. Again, this is much more human realm. So Patachara was the beautiful daughter of a very wealthy merchant in Savatthi. When she was 16 years of age, her parents had her confined to the top floor of a 7-story high mansion, where she was surrounded by guards to prevent her from keeping company with young men. In spite of this precaution, she became involved in a love affair with a servant in her parents' house. When her parents arranged a marriage for her with a young man of equal social standing, she decided to elope with her lover. Having escaped from the tower by disguising herself as a servant girl, she met her lover in town, and the couple went to live in a village far from Savatthi. There the husband earned his living by farming a small plot of land, and the young wife had to do all the menial chores, which formerly had been performed by her parents' servants. Thus she reaped the results of her deed. When she became pregnant, she begged her husband to take her back to her parents' house to give birth there, for she said, one's mother and father always have a soft spot in their hearts for their child, and can forgive any wrongdoing. Her husband refused, however, afraid that her parents would have him arrested or even killed. When she realized that he would not yield to her entreaties, she decided to go by herself. So one day, while her husband was away at work, she slipped out the door and set out down the road towards Savatthi. When her husband learned from the neighbors what had happened, he followed her and soon caught up with her. Though he tried to persuade her to return, she would not listen to him, but insisted on continuing. Before they could reach Savatthi, the birth pain started and she soon gave birth to a baby son. As she had no more reason to go to her parents' house, they turned back. Sometime later, Patachara became pregnant a second time. Again she requested her husband to take her home to her parents. Again he refused. And again she took matters into her own hands and started off carrying her son. When her husband followed her and pleaded with her to return with him, she refused to listen. After they had travelled about halfway to Savatthi, a fearful storm arose quite out of season, with thunder and lightning and incessant rain. Just then, her birth pain started. She asked her husband to find her some shelter. The husband went off to search for material to build a shed. As he was chopping down some saplings, a poisonous snake, hidden in an anthill, came out and bit him. Its poison was like molten lava, and instantly he fell down dead. Patachara waited and waited for him, but in vain. Then she gave birth to a second son. Throughout the night, both children, terrified by the buffeting of the storm, screamed at the top of their lungs. But the only protection their mother could offer them was her body, lean and haggard from her tribulations. In the morning, she placed the newborn baby on her hip, gave a finger to the other child, and set out upon the path her husband had taken, saying, "Come, dear child, your father has left us." As she turned the bend in the road, she found her husband lying dead, his body stiff as a board. She waited and lamented, blaming herself for his death, and continued on her journey. After some time, they came to the river Achiravati. On account of the rain, the river had swollen and was waist high, with a violent current. Feeling too weak to wade across with both children, Patachara left the older boy on the near bank and carried the baby across to the other side. Then she returned to take the firstborn across. When she was in midstream, a hawk, in search of prey, saw the newborn baby. Mistaking it for a piece of meat, the hawk came swooping down, pounced on the child, and flew off with the baby in its talons. While Patachara could only look on helplessly and scream, the older boy saw his mother stop in midstream and heard her shouts. He thought she was calling him and started out for her, but as soon as he stepped into the river, he was swept off by the turbulent current. Wailing and lamenting, Patachara went on her way, half crazed by the triple tragedy that had befallen her: the loss of her husband and both her sons in a single day. But more misfortune lay ahead. As she approached Sarvati, she met a traveler who was coming out from the city, and she asked him about her family. "Ask me about any family in town but that one," he told her. "Please don't ask me about that family." She insisted, however, and thus he had to speak. "Last night, during the terrible storm, their house collapsed, killing both the elderly couple and their son. All three were cremated together just a short while ago there," he said, pointing to a wisp of pale blue smoke swirling up in the distance. "If you look where I'm pointing, you can see the smoke from their funeral pyre." When she saw the smoke, instantly Patachara went mad. She tore off her clothing and ran about naked, weeping and wailing. "Both my sons are dead. My husband on the road lies dead. My mother and father burn on the funeral pyre." Those who saw her called her a crazy fool, threw rubbish at her, and pelted her with clods of earth. But she continued on until she reached the outskirts of Sarvati. At this time, the Buddha was residing at the Jetavana monastery, surrounded by a multitude of disciples. When he saw Patachara at the entrance to the monastery, he recognized her as one who was ripe for his message of deliverance. The lay disciples cried out, "Don't let that crazy woman come here." But the master said, "Do not hinder her. Let her come to me." When she had drawn near, he told her, "Sister, regain your mindfulness." Instantly, she regained her mindfulness. A kindly man threw her his outer cloak. She put it on, and approaching the enlightened one, she prostrated herself at his feet and told him her tragic story. The teacher listened to her patiently with deep compassion, and then replied, "Patachara, do not be troubled any more. You have come to one who is able to be your shelter and refuge. It is not only today that you have met with calamity and disaster, but throughout this beginningless round of existence, weeping over the loss of sons and others dear to you, you have shed more tears than the waters of the four oceans." As he went on speaking about the perils of samsara, her grief subsided. The Buddha then concluded his instructions with the following verses: "The four oceans contain but a little water, compared to all the tears that we have shed. Smitten by sorrow, bewildered by pain, why, O woman, are you still heedless? No sons are there for shelter, nor father, nor related folk, for one sees by the ender, kinsmen provide no shelter. Having well understood this fact, the wise man, well restrained by virtues, quickly indeed should clear the path going to Nibbana." This exposition of the Enlightened One penetrated her mind so deeply that she could completely grasp the impermanence of all conditioned things and the universality of suffering. By the time the Buddha had finished his discourse, it was not a lamenting madwoman that sat at his feet, but a stream enterer, a knower of the Dhamma, one assured of final liberation. Immediately after attaining stream entry, Patachara requested the going forth and the higher ordination, and the Blessed One sent her to the bhikkhunis. After entering the bhikkhuni sangha, the order of nuns, Patachara practiced the Dhamma with great diligence. Her efforts soon bore fruit, and she attained her goal. She describes her development in her verses in a Terigatha. Plowing the field with their plows, sowing seeds upon the ground, maintaining their wives and children, young men acquire wealth. Then why, when I am pure in virtue, practicing the Master's teaching, have I not attained Nibbana? For I am not lazy, nor puffed up. Having washed my feet, I reflected upon the waters. When I saw the foot water flow from the high ground down the slope, my mind became concentrated, like an excellent thoroughbred steed. Having taken a lamp, I entered my cell. I inspected the bed and sat down on the couch. Then, having taken a needle, I pulled down the wick. The liberation of the mind was like the quenching of the lamp. As Patachara observed the water trickling down the slope, she noticed that some streams sank quickly into the ground, others flowed down a little farther, while others flowed all the way to the bottom of the slope. This, she recognized, was a perfect metaphor for the nature of sentient existence. Some beings live for a very short time only, like her children. Others live into their adult years, like her husband. Still others live into old age, like her parents. But just as all the streams of water eventually had to disappear into the soil, so death, the end maker, lays his hand upon all living beings and none can escape his grasp. When this realization dawned upon Patachara, her mind immediately became composed. With steady concentration, she contemplated conditioned phenomena as impermanent, suffering, and not self. But still, in spite of her efforts, she could not make the breakthrough to final liberation. Fatigued, she decided to retire for the night. When she entered her dwelling and sat down on the bed, just as she extinguished the oil lamp, all the momentum she had built up through her previous practice bore fruit. In a fraction of a second, simultaneously with the quenching of the lamp, supreme knowledge arose. She had reached her goal, Nibbana, the permanent quenching of the fires of greed, hatred, and delusion. During her career as a bhikkhuni, Patachara achieved the distinction of being designated by the Buddha as the foremost among the bhikkhunis who are experts in the Vinaya. That's the nuns' rules of discipline. She was thus the female counterpart of the elder Upali, the chief Vinaya specialist among the bhikkhus. This appointment was the fruition of an ancient aspiration, we are told, that in the dispensation of the Buddha Padumuttara, Patachara had seen the teacher assign to an elder nun the position of preeminence amongst nuns versed in the Vinaya, and it seemed to her as if he were taking that nun by the arm and admitting her to the Garden of Delight. So she formed her resolve and made this aspiration. Under a Buddha like you, may I become preeminent among nuns versed in the Vinaya. The Lord Padumuttara, extending his mind into the future, perceived that her aspiration would be fulfilled and gave her the prediction. It is perhaps natural that Patachara should have been particularly concerned with discipline, since in her earlier years she had experienced so keenly the bitter fruit of reckless behavior. In the order of nuns, she had learned that intensive training in discipline is indispensable for achieving peace and serenity. Through her own experience, moreover, she had acquired a deep understanding of the ways of the human heart, and was thus able to help other nuns in their training. Many of the nuns turned to her for guidance and found great consolation in her advice. One example is Sindar Chanda, who expresses her gratitude to Patachara in a verse in a Terigatha. The Terigatha is verses of enlightened bhikkhunis. Because she had compassion for me, Patachara gave me the going forth. Then she gave me an exhortation and enjoined me in the ultimate goal. Having heard her word, I followed her instruction. The lady's exhortation was not vain. I am fetter-free with a triple knowledge. So, it's a very samsaric but profound story. From madness to stream entry. It's very human, isn't it? On one level you have Nanda having been born in a palace, thinking about princesses. That's part of the human experience as well, isn't it, for people with a lot of good karma. Then you have this other poor woman who's deluded by her love. How many people fall in love and think if they can be with the one they love, they'll be happy? And that's often the beginning of a sad story. samsara. But it has a wonderful ending, doesn't it? And how wonderful that she could come into the Jetavana crying like a mad woman, and the Buddha's beautiful equanimity, and he can see with his psychic power. This is where you really see Buddha's psychic powers. Oh, this is going to be one of the foremost nuns. Let her in. He teaches her within a few moments. She's gone from a crazy woman to an first stage of enlightenment. I also wanted to mention that the bhikkhunis aren't often mentioned in the Sutta Pitaka. Obviously, they were around. So here we have the Buddha recognizing that she was going to be an important person, capable of training those women who could be trained, and sent her to the bhikkhuni order, which obviously was nearby here in Savatthi. And so it's a nice story which demonstrates the fact that the bhikkhunis were established and attaining to high distinctions of spiritual realization in this same area. The last story, it's pretty fantastic, but I mention it because it happened in Savatthi, and apparently all of the Buddhas display their most supreme psychic feat here in Savatthi. I don't know why, but it's interesting. Apparently it's always India where Buddhas become enlightened. It's always at that particular site under the Bodhi tree. Apparently the first teaching is always in a deer park in Isipatana, and the showing of psychic power is always in Savatthi. So I'll just find that text and I'll read what happened. After the Buddha established a rule preventing monks from displaying miraculous powers, he was challenged by a group of non-Buddhist yogis to a display of his own supernormal powers. As a Buddha, he was exempt from his own prohibition, so he accepted their challenge and stated that he would perform a miracle at the foot of a mango tree. So there was the occasion in Nalanda when one layperson was saying to Lord Buddha, there are many people in Nalanda with great faith in you, and if you have one of your monks display their psychic powers, they would have even more faith in you. And the Buddha actually said on that occasion, I don't like displays of psychic powers. The miracle that he held in highest esteem was the miracle of teaching. But you could see the request was to give rise to more faith of people who already had faith. But if we understand that Savatthi, in a way, is like the center of the mandala, it's the Buddha's headquarters. He had royal patronage, he had the patronage of millionaires, and tens of thousands of people were becoming arahants. But you could imagine that leaders of other sects and members of other sects, that there would have been competition and there would have been jealousy. And many of those people would have been very intelligent, capable of debating with logic. And so if you have another order finding fault with the Buddha or publicly doubting his abilities, you can see that that's a different kind of a challenge. It's not asking the Lord Buddha to show off. It's a challenge. They're actually picking a fight. And I think it's appropriate in the headquarters, in the center of the mandala, if someone comes and picks a fight, it would seem to be suitable and appropriate for the Lord Buddha to show them that he has mastered psychic powers and is fully accomplished. So he did what apparently only Buddhas can do, and he did it here in Savatthi. Tomorrow when we leave on our way to Lumbini, we'll actually stop off for a few minutes at the place of the Twin Miracle. If anybody wants to perfect the psychic powers of a Buddha, you can make your aspiration there. So those people who had challenged him, because the Buddha said he would perform his miracle at the foot of a mango tree, to keep him from proceeding, his opponents uprooted all the mango trees in the vicinity, leading the Buddha to cause a great tree to grow spontaneously from a mango seed. That was the first part of the miracle. Put the seed down and it grew into a great tree right before their eyes. Then the Buddha created a bejeweled walkway in the sky. He proceeded to walk backwards and forwards on it. Then he caused flames to emerge from the upper part of his body, streams of water from the lower part, then water from the upper part and flames from the lower part, then flames from the right side and water from the left side, then from his front and back, his right eye and left eye, his right ear and left ear, etc. Then he created a double of himself with whom he had a conversation. It is because of the simultaneous presence of fire and water, and perhaps because of the creation of this double, that the event is called the paired miracle or the twin miracle. So, there we have it, performed in Sarvati. So, we see that this Buddha jewel is multifaceted with his abilities. It would have been amazing to see, wouldn't it? The Buddha floating up in the sky and having a conversation with his double and emanating fire and water. And for those who needed to be convinced, I suppose it's much more touching, isn't it, that the Buddha could talk to a crazy woman and establish her in enlightenment. That kind of miracle also seems to me more impressive in a way. But can you imagine the competition? And the Buddhism is spreading all throughout northern India in these two most powerful kingdoms. It has royal patronage. And so India is a place of ancient tradition. So you can imagine these other schools, spiritual lineages and traditions, losing followers, losing supporters, and these bhikkhus and bhikkhunis going everywhere and receiving more and more support. You could understand that there would be, it would be appropriate for Lord Buddha to demonstrate, look, I'm the real deal. I don't just teach people how to be enlightened. I have mastered every spiritual quality. So he showed them his stuff. So just sharing with you a few things that occurred in and around Sarvati for your consideration. And this evening we will explore the life and times of Visakha.